Okay, the first part is where and when you were born.
On June 25th, 1919.
Were you born in a house in Transcona?
Yes, at the Pound.
At the Pound?
Believe it or not, that's stamped on my birth certificate.
Why was that? Were your parents...
My dad was a policeman, and also at that time, the Pound keeper.
Okay. And how long was your dad a policeman?
Oh. Close to... he was a policeman here in Fort Garry and back here, so in around 30 years, approximately 30 years.
Okay, and a bit about your early education. Where were you educated? You know what schools?
In Transcona, just in Transcona, the one and only school at that time, Central School. And that would be high school education.
Okay. And. Were you a member of the militia before the war?
No. Okay. No, I joined on September the 5th, approximately.
Mm-hmm. And what was your rank and what company did you join?
I was in D Company. I was a private initially, and I was a sergeant made a sergeant in the field.
Okay. Can you tell me a bit about your early training? Where was this done and what type of training?
Well, our initial training was in Minto, and then we went on to Fort Osborne. In Jamaica, we received practically no training. We were on guard duty every other day, and primarily because of fever and what have you. It was just about every other day. There was very little leave there. In fact, there was no leave in the 15, 16 months we were there.
Okay. Now, the Grenadiers came back to Winnipeg in the fall of 41.
Mm-hmm.
What were your feelings when you were given leave when you came back from Jamaica, and then all of a sudden it was cancelled, and then you were put on a train with an unknown destination? What was your feeling at this time?
Nothing special. It was just one of those things. You sort of expect something like that in the army. No great, no qualms about it at all. It was just, you're in the army, you take what you get.
Did you have any idea of where you were going?
Not really, until the train started hitting west, and then we figured we were in for the end of the Pacific. That's getting quite a while ago. I can't quite remember all that. Whether we, there was probably, there's always barrack room rumors, so I can't really tell you.
Can you tell me anything that happened when you arrived in Vancouver? Like, the course of the events when you arrived in Vancouver, what did you do after you got off the train?
We got right onto the boat. There was no ifs or buts. I had some relatives in Vancouver that I had hoped to get a chance to phone them. We got off the train, onto the dock, and into the boat, and that was it. There was a bit of a riot there the day previous with some of our own people because of grub, but. I missed it for some reason. I guess there was a batch went ahead, But primarily, I guess they didn't like the mutton. And I think the main reason probably that a lot of them wanted an excuse to jump the boat. Once they got an inkling of where they were going.
Mm-hmm. Were any stops made between Vancouver and Hong Kong, and what went on at these stops?
No, we stopped off at Hawaii for a matter of hours. We stopped off at Pago Pago for refueling. We went into to Manila, but there was no getting off the boat.
And was there any announcement on the boat as to what your destination was, like between Vancouver and Hong Kong, was there any formal announcement made?
I can't remember. I believe there was an announcement shortly after we left Hawaii. I believe there was an announcement, but to be honest with you, I can't remember.
Okay. What happened upon your arrival in Hong Kong or Kowloon? You actually landed on the mainland.
Yeah, we were quartered in Kowloon up until the fighting started. Mm-hmm. And
what type of training was done? Was it, or was there any done at all?
Very, very little. Our vehicles hadn't arrived. We had a little training on the boat with Bren guns. Prior to that, the only machine guns we had were Vickers. So on the boat back over, we had training in Brens and mortars. Other than that, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Where were you when the actual Japanese attack did take place, and what was your reaction to it?
We had moved over to the island the day before. Mm-hmm. and we were at Wang Nuchong Gap, and then we moved back the next day to the mainland. We were up with the Royal Scots.
Mm-hmm. To what position was this?
And that would be at the Rum Drinkers Line, is it? I believe.
Gin
Drinkers Line.
Yeah.
I can't. It's up on the frontier.
Mm-hmm.
Between China and Kowloon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What were your duties with the Royal Scots?
We were just a backup, covering their retreat. I don't think it was ever, as near as I can gather, it was never meant to hold it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just in there as a delaying action. So we practically both come back together.
Mm-hmm. Is this where
I think we lost one or two men in our company there. That was all. Mm-hmm. On the mainland.
Yeah. Is this where you were when the actual Japanese attack did take place, or up at this Jinjin line?
Yes.
And did you see any Japanese planes at all?
Yes, there was several over us. Scout planes.
Okay. After the attack did take place, what were your orders?
Just to provide any backup if necessary.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go from there?
Back up to Wang Nuchong Gap. After we were only on the mainland 2 days.
Mm-hmm. And what were your orders when you arrived to the island itself?
No specific orders. That was a matter of 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
So no specific orders at all.
And did you stay at this one place all the time?
Yep, all the time.
And was this to act as a backup?
No, no, this was just a position we were at. It was, in a sense, the brigade headquarters. We had the brigadier and the brigade major and the brigade colonel and our company, D Company.
Okay. Now, the surrender itself, how did you find out about it? This would be on December the 25th.
Well, we were all called. The fighting actually stopped pretty well on the day before. Mm-hmm. And we were all called in, taken to I can't even remember the place now. I think it was at Cameron. Mount Cameron. And we were billeted in the building, and that was it, pretty well. We knew the surrender was, the fighting was over, and there was no real official announcement made, but the, you know how the rumors go down the line. That was about the size of it.
Okay. So what happened to you after you did hear this rumor of the surrender? Did you stay in the one place, or and the Japanese?
The Japanese came to us.
Mm-hmm. And what happened then?
Oh, we were we had to surrender pile all our arms. We made a great circuit. It seemed like we walked about 5 miles around the top of the island and back to where we were. Now, whether they were just exercising us or what, I don't really know. But that was about the size of it. They had a dozen or so soldiers with us. We made this great circuitous route and back to where our starting point. And then after that, we were taken down to Shamshapo Barracks.
Mm-hmm. How many men were there in this group that was traveling around the island?
I have no idea. Offhand, I'd say probably 75.
Mm-hmm. Were they all from D Company? Or
no,
from
no, there was several companies as well.
Okay. Now you said you went back to Shamshapo?
Just two, and we were never there to start with. This was I'm not sure, was this an old refugee camp? I believe it was an old refugee camp.
Mm-hmm.
It was lousier and hell, anyway, but...
this would be North Point Camp, then, would it? Was it on the island?
On the island, North Point, pardon me. Shamshapo was over in the... was the ones in the, where we were quartered first in Kowloon.
Mm-hmm.
See, I told you, my memory is getting a little hazy.
Can you describe the camp to me? Can you remember what it looked like? Was there a lot of buildings?
Well, there was quite a few barrack blocks. Quite a few barrack blocks, dark and dingy, lousy. That's the main thing I can remember about it. Was lousy, mm-hmm. and dirty. It was right close to the river or the ocean, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. What about the food here? What was it like?
Well, it was pretty skimpy. Rice primarily and a few vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a total change to us because most of us were constipated for weeks on end. And it was very meager. You know, it was a total change to what we were used to, and I guess that's why most of us got so ill on it at one stage or another.
Mm-hmm. What about sickness and the treatment that they had? Was there any sickness at this time?
Oh, not for the first while. You know, because most of the men at that time were in pretty good shape, and they did last several months, the majority of them. But once they started to go, they went very fast. I know myself, I ended up in the hospital, I forget. It was probably...
Bone Road, would it be?
It was Bone Road Hospital, but I'm just trying to think when. Probably somewhere around May, and I was there practically through till November. In fact, I was just out, and we were shipped to Japan.
What sickness did you have?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was all the sore feet and the beriberi, I guess, mm-hmm. and the dysentery, primarily dysentery. And the, what do you call it when you get the...
Diphtheria?
Diphtheria.
Mm-hmm. And what type of medical treatment did you get?
We finally got some B shots of B1 or B2,
mm-hmm.
vitamin shots. For the pneumonia and that later, there was nothing but much other than aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
I was so bloody sick I can't remember what I got, what kind of treatment it was.
Okay. While you were in North Point, was there still some type of organization among the ranks?
Oh, yes.
Can you describe?
Oh, yes. We carried on the best we can. There was still an orderly room every day, pretty well. If there was any misdemeanors, they were appeared before the officer of the day, and there was a reasonable amount of organization. Nobody, I can't recall anyone ever getting out of hand. What could you do?
Okay. Now, were any of the men put to work while they were in North Point Camp?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay.
None that I'm aware of.
Now, you said you went to Japan. This would be at the end of 42, I guess, would it be? The end of 1942?
The end of 42, right. I think it was the first week of January, more or less. In 43. Yeah. In about that time.
Was this the first draft to Japan?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And can you tell me how many men went and what was the trip like?
I would say between the two battalions, it was close to 500 men. The trip was very uneventful, but very cramped. We were all packed down in the hold, and it passed like a dream. You couldn't move, and you just sat there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't recall any particular events. Most everybody kept their mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
You were in the hold. You weren't in a position to argue.
Yeah. How long did the trip take, do you recall?
Well, as I recall, it wasn't much more than possibly three or four days at the most.
Okay. And whereabouts did you land in Japan?
As I recall, it was Osaka.
Okay. And did anything happen in Osaka after arrival that comes to mind right away?
No, nothing.
Did they give you any food or anything when you arrived?
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. As I recall, we didn't go hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the boat, maybe we were possibly limited to, small meals and possibly twice a day, but I don't recall. I don't recall anybody going real hungry.
Okay. And where did you go from Osaka?
Direct through to our camp in Tokyo, 3D.
Okay. And were you put to work in this camp?
We started to work almost within the week at the shipyards in Tokyo.
Okay. What was your job in the shipyards?
I was working as a slinger first, working with the cranes, and this is lifting the plates, the steel plates, onto the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then later we were on the on a plate gang, attaching plates, and pretty well that was that covered in,
mm-hmm.
or anything else they wanted you to do. No, pardon me, we did work later on in the this would be the manufacturing end. We were drilling plates and so on.
Mm-hmm.
In the it's a shop, machine shop type of effort.
Did you receive pay for this work?
Yes, we received a pay of a sort. There was never any shortage of money around, but there was nowhere to spend it either. They gave you some type of pay for it. I can't recall what it was, but there was lots of it around. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
Okay. Was there any time that yourself or any of the other men tried to sabotage any of the equipment or, you know, any of the work you were doing?
Not mine. I'd heard rumors that there was a fire in the shipyard and a couple of small things like that, but to my knowledge, they were never really confirmed. I think maybe sometimes imaginations were working.
Okay. What was the food like at this camp?
Scarce. There was primarily a mixture of rice and barley, and a type of a Korean rice. And there was the odd mixture of vegetables, Japanese types of vegetables. And then there was a few specialties like bean curd that went in, bean sprouts. But it was scarce, and if you were off sick, it was half rations. And right down the line, instead of a full cup, it was half a cup, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. How many times a day were you fed?
If you were working, you were fed three times a day. In fact, if you weren't working, you were fed three times a day as well, but they were smaller rations for anybody that stayed in camp. Mm-hmm. Unless you had a friend in the cookhouse, which they didn't have too many friends.
What about Red Cross parcels? How many did you receive, or did you receive any at all?
We never, as I recall it, ever received a full one. It was always split between two, three, or four people. I can't recall ever receiving a full parcel, mm-hmm. but we did receive them at, I can't recall, maybe three times, but always a part of one, a shared effort.
Mm-hmm. What about the sickness at this camp and the medical treatment, if there was any?
Oh, we had our own doctor, Dr. Reed.
Mm-hmm.
He did miracles for what he had, you know. So, question possibly of. Hi, little squirt. There wasn't too much. Occasionally, they brought him a serum for vitamin injections to keep the swelling down. But as far as pneumonia goes, which I caught at the camp, a good case of it. All there was aspirins and a lot of hope. Beyond that, I couldn't honestly tell you what Dr. Reed had, but I would gather it wasn't a great deal. And the real critical patients used to go downtown into the headquarters hospital.
Okay. How did you find the Japanese treated their own men?
They didn't believe in a corporal type of discipline. If the private gets out of his hand, the corporal wallops them, and this progresses up to all ranks, works backwards as well. No, they believe in this type of discipline, and maybe for a large army like that, it works quite satisfactorily. And they applied the same principles to us. If any of us got out of hand, you could be assured that you were going to get kicked or booted or butted or something.
Was there just Canadians in this camp, or were there Americans also? Or?
There was a few Americans. But primarily Canadians. But there were a few Canadians. In the next camp we went to, there was Aussies and Dutch, Japanese.
How long did you stay at 3D?
We were there till approximately. Well, let me see. I want the last 4 months I was in the hospital. That would be roughly from December 40 December 44, I guess, till about January 45. And when I moved, I moved directly to this little camp on a little island. It was, it was a headquarters camp anyway. And I stayed there as the for some time. And then I came back to my camp, my own camp, and I was there a day or 2 days, and we were shipped up north. So that would have been probably in February, roughly of 45, in about that time. Mm-hmm. It was just the time when the heavy bombing of Tokyo started, and I guess this is one of the factors that that caused them to move us. Mm-hmm. We had been going for the past, actually from the summer of 44 till the bombing had started with the B-29s primarily. When the B-29s got operating out of Okinawa, then they were quite apprehensive about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was a task force moved in fairly close to Tokyo, and the night bombers from the carriers were hitting them pretty hard. I remember one particular day at the headquarters camp. Oh, and I guess this was in probably January. Oh, they must have burned half of Tokyo down. And I know the bridges, we were on this bit of an island, even the bridge onto the island was burnt. Couldn't get over it. I think we were stuck for about 5 days, and we had nothing to eat but clams and odds and sods like that. I know we had, the first time it was opened up, we went downtown and onto the mainland to bring back grub, and I was on the ration truck, and we were very apprehensive about what the public would think about it, you know, because the place was still small and really grim. Hi.
Okay, now this last camp you went to, how did you go there? Did you go on the train or by truck?
No, it was all by truck, as I recall it. Mm-hmm.
And were you put to work the same as 3D camp?
No. No, it was more of a convalescent camp. I had pneumonia, mm-hmm. and then I got double pneumonia on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so once I was getting about on my feet again, they took me over there. And there was I wasn't working. Possibly some of the others may have been. Mm-hmm. But a great majority of them were, there was just about everything in the camp, British, and Yanks, Aussies, a good many officers. In fact, they had three B-29 pilots tied up, hanging by their wrists just at the main gate as you come into the place. And I think they gradually all, the whole caboodle went out of their mind. But they were, the Japs were actually petrified of the B-29s because the Zeros couldn't reach them. Mm-hmm. And occasionally when one did get down and they were shot down, they sure made the pilots pay for it, or the crew. You know.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that the Japanese treated the Canadians better than the other troops? Or was it all about the same?
Well, from the experience I have, I don't think there was really any difference. I think they did make a play towards the Indian troops to get them on their side for the Asian Cold Prosperity Sphere and so on. But between the rest of them, the Canadians and the Yanks and the British, I don't think there was really too great a difference. if you listen to if you listen to all the stories, you couldn't come up with any good opinion because everybody was downtrodden. But as a rule, in the camps I was at, if you minded your own business, you were left alone. Now, there's no question there must be exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. But I found if you mound your own business and did what you were told, you were pretty well assured that everything would go along. But you stuck out a line. We had a couple of two fellas in 3D that were caught selling goods to the Japanese civilians in the boatyards, and they were worked over with rubber hoses and so on. They were they'd bring in a bunch of the Japanese shoes, and you'd just fit yourself, and what was left over they took back on. So automatically somebody figured they're going to pilfer a few and start selling for grub and so forth. But the two of them were caught. I know one fellow from Transcona here. And they were worked over real good. And then when they passed out, they would throw a pail of water on them and start all over again. They did this for a couple of days, and then they shipped them downtown to some type of a jail where they made up envelopes for a month or two. Brought them back to camp. But cured the pilfering.
What was the food like at this last camp? Was it the same as in the other one, or was it a bit better?
No.
This convalescent camp.
Oh. As I recall, it wasn't any better, and it wasn't any worse. You know, you were only getting a certain amount. And the variety, what you got was practically non-existent. If there was vegetables, there was vegetables. If there wasn't, there wasn't. But everybody always eyed the grub wagon that came into the camp, and everybody watched everybody else like a dog, you know. And things were really down to essentials. I think most of us were little nuts. You know, at that stage, you know, they were hungry, always hungry, and one subject grub. So, you know, so the stories you'll hear are, you've got to take with a grain of salt, because I think actually, you know, we were just a little cockeyed, a little nuts.
Okay. Now, what happened after this this convalescent type of camp? You left there?
Yes, we left the headquarters camp, and as I say, we came back to 3D for a day or 2 days. It was a very, very short time. In fact, I think it couldn't have been any more than 2 days, because we packed up and we got on, as I recall, it was... It's a train, I believe, I'm sure. We took a train, and that was it. We were up to the, we were up in the hills in northern Japan.
And what camp is this? Do you call it in?
For the love of me, I can't just put my finger on it.
Was it Niigata?
No, it wasn't Niigata.
Oyama?
No, neither one of them.
Sendai?
See, I have Hankow Barracks, Kowloon. Shamshapo, December the 7th. 41, North Point Camp, January the 23rd, Bowen Road Hospital, September the 12th to December the 18th. Now, I bought this book just a few days after I got home, and I wrote just for my own reference. Shamshapo Camp, December the 18th to January the 19th. So that's when we left. That's when we left Japan. Mm-hmm. And 3D prisoner of war camp, Kawasaki, Tokyo, Japan, January the 24th, 43. Tokyo Military Hospital, December the 11th, 44, till February the 22nd, 45. 6B Camp Ohashi, North Honshu, April the 1st, 45. Liberated 16th of September, 45.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So some of that stuff I've given you was obviously a little my dates and my name.
So this last camp, what was this like? Can you describe the camp?
It was a fairly new camp. Half of the people in 3D went to Ohashi, mm-hmm. and the other half, as I remember, went Sendai. Yeah, Sendai, I believe. I believe that was it. But there was a permanent camp established there first, and it was Americans, not too many Americans, but mostly Dutch and Javanese. I'd say the bulk of them were Javanese. A few of the senior types were actual Dutch. I know I worked in the electrical end of it,
mm-hmm.
and we had I think there was three or four journeyman electricians, and they were all Aussies from I think there was one or two off of from the naval end, and the rest were infantry. There was an American captain. He was the, I believe he was an electrical engineer, but he was primarily in the radio end of it. There was an American naval rating. It would be an engineering type, but he was the radio specialist. In fact, he had made a radio for in the camp. There was two or three others, but I worked in a ball mill there. It was actually an iron mine.
Mm-hmm.
The mine was in reverse from what we have here. It instead of going down into the various stopes and levels, you went up. It was a gravity fed mill. The crushing mill was at the lower level, and we call this 0 meters, and the intake was about roughly 90 meters up. That's where the ore came in, and then the different stopes were cut into the side of a hill, and you went. It was in reverse from what you would have here, but it was an economical type of operation because you didn't need any great hoists or elevators, you know, to haul up the ore. But it was a fairly low grade type of ore. But it was put through the ball mills, and they had a cyanide flotation process for taking out any copper and odds and sods and magnetic separators at the end of the ball mill. It was a fairly new effort. I would say it was probably put in by the British. It seemed like a lot of, from the electrical end, British equipment. I know it was all 50 cycle stuff. And it operated 10% slower from what the nameplate ratings were.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked there steady. It was quite a healthy walk from the camp to the mill. That's something like, as I recall, 12 kilometers. And then the boys that were working in the mine itself had about another 4 kilometers past that. So thankfully, I was working in the mill.
Mm-hmm. What was the sickness like at this camp?
Not as bad as it was. Not as bad as it was in Tokyo. We got, I would say, larger rations, because physically the boys were working harder, so you've got a better ration. But there was more the trots, let me put it that way, especially in the last couple of months, because the diet was heavy on beans, soybeans, and these things had to be cooked about 24 hours continuously before you could digest them. So quite often they didn't digest that well. And
okay, what about the medicines? Were there very little types of medicine, or supply was very low?
Very, very low. In fact, I would gather at this stage of the game that the Japanese themselves had very little. In fact, judging by the type of lunches that the workmen had, they weren't much better off than we were, except they got a little more meat as a rule, or a little more fish. Mm-hmm. But they had one thing over us, that they were had probably been conditioned to this type of a diet for a long time.
How long were you were at this camp from?
February.
February of 45.
Right, till
the end
September,
of the
yeah.
What was your daily routine like? Like, what time did you get up in the morning? And
well, we were up bright and early. As I recall, we were up before 6. We had breakfast, and then we had this long walk. As I say, it was 10 to 12 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And it was uphill. Coming home at night, it was downhill, but it was 6 days a week. 6 days a week. We had one day a week off, and that you used to wash your clothes or rest or whatever. There was very little in the line of recreation other than talking about what you were going to do when you got out and what you were going to eat and so forth.
Okay. And what time did you come back at night to the camp?
As I recall, we quit before 5, and then it was an hour and a half's walk, something in that line back.
Okay.
It was very close to dark by the time we got home, and this is fairly northerly in Japan. I know I'm just trying to think. At the time they dropped the atomic bomb, which we didn't know at the very moment, although we did hear in a day or two later that, as I say, this American radio man, they had a radio in which was in camp before we were there. Mm-hmm. We were aware that something had happened, because we were all taken to one side and the guard posted over us, and the remainder of all the workers were called into to given points, and they were addressed by addressed over the central loudspeaker system, and we gathered it was something by the emperor, and then this went on a couple of days later. And we were very apprehensive at that time, because we thought, well, if something is as bad as what they led us to believe had happened, hell, what was going to happen to us? So we were quite jittery. No one knew what an atomic bomb was, mm-hmm. least of our people. So what's an atomic bomb? Mm-hmm. But we knew it must have been something, because they were very, very surly, especially the soldiers. The workers, actually, in some respects, were more friendlier than ever, and Most of them indicated that the war would be over very shortly. But the soldiers were quite touchy, quite touchy.
During the last few months of the war, was there any change in the guards you had at the camp? And like, did the ones that had been with you like since your arrival, were they taken away from the camp and a new set of guards put on duty?
Not as I recall. Not as I recall. In fact, the majority of them were at the last camp were older types. In fact, one of them that I worked for was I guess he was some kind of a half-ass electrician too. So he used to come down in there and work with you once in a while. And but as I recall, they stayed right with us. Mm-hmm. But we were not in the close contact with the guards that we were in Tokyo. In Tokyo, they used to come right through the barrack blocks, and even at night they would pull your clothes off in the middle of the night to make sure you had your loincloth around the kidneys, and if you didn't have it on, they would make bloody sure you knew about it. But that was one of the regulations, that you wore that all the time. And but up there, they were not in as close a contact with them.
What about camp interpreters? What were they like? Were they very helpful? Did you have different ones in each camp, or did they travel with you?
Well, in Tokyo, we had Kondo. He was the one of the main camp interpreters. I believe he may have been educated in Canada, from what I can remember now. But up in Ohasi, I can't recall who we had. Mm-hmm. Some of the workers had an understanding of English, and by that time, most of us had a pretty good knowledge of Japanese, so we could get along quite well, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think more on this guard business. As I say, if you minded your own business, you didn't see the guards too much, especially in the last camp. Mm-hmm. I recall that I recall one day, I guess it was Admiral Halsey's task force moving in. The town below us now, I can't for the love of me think of the name of it, but it was a steel mill center, and roughly 20 kilometers below us, right at sea level, and it was quite a huge steel manufacturing plant, something similar to Stelco in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. This task force moved in, and there was no opposition at all. The dive bombers come over, and they were strafe the place lousy, and you could even spot the 16-inch shells in midair, and we were looking from away up in the hills. But even then, some of the guards sat down right beside us and watched the action too. So, as I recall, there was very, very little friction. Nothing that occasionally in Tokyo, you know, they'd get a little hostile at things. But here, there didn't seem to be any close affinity with the guards. They minded their own business and didn't come too much in the barracks.
Mm-hmm. Now, the end of the war was the actual surrender of the Japanese was in the middle of August. Mm-hmm. Now, when did you find out about this, and how did you find out?
Well, about the time the atomic bomb was dropped, I'm not sure whether it was the first one or the second one, all the personnel at the plant, the Japanese personnel, were called to specific points and listened to a speech, and I believe it was from the Emperor. And then this was done the second time, and then I think the day after, the following day, we were taken back to camp, and that was it. So we gathered the war was over. Mm-hmm. As I say, there was a radio, mm-hmm. and we we knew pretty well, we had a pretty good idea what was happening within a day or two. I'm not sure myself where the radio was cached. Nobody asked about it. Nobody wanted to know too much. They liked to know the news, but they didn't want to know. They didn't want to get into details because it's a touchy subject. You know, if anybody's caught with it, it'd be hell flying.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the Japanese make any formal announcement to the prisoners, or was it just rumored all through the camp that the war was over?
You know, for the love of me, I can't remember. I don't recall any formal announcement by the Japanese, other than, I'm trying to think who was our senior officer. Captain Reed came with us from Tokyo, and there was an American lieutenant by the name of Flynn, I believe it was. There may have been one other officer besides our own Sergeant Major Keenan. And as I recall, the guards just stacked their arms. And the guards stayed with us, as a matter of interest, all the way through it. But we were allowed to go out, because I recall that that myself and three or four others, we walked down to the steel mill at the coast just to see what the bombers had done to it, and it was a long, long hike. It was, as I say, it must have been 15 to 20 kilometers, and I know it took us all doggone day there and back. But we, as we were thin at that time. I was at that time, I'd say I was roughly in Tokyo. I used to go around 60, 62 kilos. At there, I was probably a little bit heavier, but I was in pretty good shape from the walking we'd been doing for the past 6 months.
So how long was it until you were actually taken from the camp?
It was September the 16th.
So it would be just about a month then?
Almost a full month, yeah. In fact, maybe a day or two over it. What was it? Was it the 9th or this
14th? So what were your activities during this month?
Well, the B-29s used to come over occasionally and drop a parachute supplies in, and this provided quite an excursion, especially when the parachutes didn't open and there was peaches flying all over the mountainside. I can't recall the number of time and missions they flew. They did lose a few planes in that too, because it was mountain valleys, and they're not the most easy to fly, I presume. But other than that, we went for walks, and that was about the only. I remember we even walked back to the mine once or twice just to see, just to take a look around, and walked down to the seashore just the once. But time flew, and then there was an Canadian intelligence officer came in. I believe he was in for a day or 2 days, and he gave us some idea what was happening on the outside, and told us what we could expect in war veterans allowances and a few things like this, you know. But time flew fairly fast, because I didn't find anybody really getting, you know, fidgety and that. Mm-hmm. A few boys did take off and got back to Tokyo by one way or another. In fact, one of the boys from Transcona here. There was half a dozen from Transcona. My neighbor was killed, the one who lived right beside me. He was killed in the first...
What was his name?
Maxwell, Ralph Maxwell. Mm-hmm. But there was four or five others. Bob Nixon, he was a doctor. He was killed at Estevan here a few years back in a plane crash.
And how did you leave the camp? Did you go Did Americans come and take you out by train or by truck?
By truck down to the docks at this little steel town I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. And we got on to boat. I got on there. I believe it was a Liberty boat. And we stripped off. We thought just for a casual inspection, and we got back. Our clothes were gone. They just burned them. Issued us new clothes right on the boat. Of course, we were all, you know, lousy was the name of the day for a few years.
And where did you go on the boats? Did they take you to Tokyo? Or?
We went to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. And what happened there?
Nothing too much. We stayed, we pretty well stayed on the boat. Mm-hmm. And we were in the, in the harbor for 2 or 3 days. In fact, there was a, we hit the tail end of a typhoon, and we were struggling all the time just to keep off the breakwater. We were just holding our own. The sailors claimed we were more or less full speed ahead, but we were just holding our own enough to keep off the breakwater. And in fact, there was a, the naval boats that did hit it at the strongest point, there was quite a few of them were lost.
And where did you go from Tokyo? And how did you go? Did you fly or go by boat?
We went by boat right to Guam. Mm-hmm. And we were there for a week, approximately a week, in the hospital. Presumably because this was a There were facilities available. They didn't do anything special. Checked us over and so forth, and refitted us. And then we flew from there to Kwajalein, Johnson, and then to Hawaii. And there we were there for another 5 to 7 days, and then we were off to Frisco.
And what happened in San Francisco?
We were on. We landed in Oakland, and we were taken to Angels Island. I guess it is the. And we were there for close 4 or 5 days. We couldn't get off the doggone place. Mm-hmm. A lot of us would like to have gone downtown Frisco, but we couldn't get off. When we were finally taken off, we were put onto a train and right up to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I think we, where did we go? To Shaughnessy Hospital first, I guess, and then off onto the island.
Mm-hmm. And what happened in Victoria?
Checked over, fingerprinted, knew, I can't recall whether we got new uniforms or not. We got flashes, shoulder flashes, and we were interrogated a bit. But I think the main interrogation came back here with the provost marshal, or who was it? I can't recall the.
So you came back to Winnipeg. You went, I guess, from Victoria to Vancouver by ferry boat, and then
right.
By train to Winnipeg?
Yeah, we came back by train.
Okay. And what happened on your arrival in Winnipeg? Were you given leave right away? And
yes, let me see. I think we just reported in to the following day or so. We reported into Fort Osborne. Mm-hmm. And then I forget how long I was on leave. Well, I got my discharge. I actually started work the following month. Mm-hmm. But I never got my discharge till January. But I had been working in December.
And where was this at? Where were you working
at? Oh, at the Dominion Mauling out here in Transcona.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your job there?
Electrician.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you finally received your discharge in January?
Yeah, approximately the middle of January.
That would be 46 then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how long did you stay at Dominion Mauling?
Well, I was there for 2 years, and then I worked down east in Toronto for another year, and then I came back here, and I stayed at Dominion Mauling till 56, mm-hmm. and I've been with Manitoba Hydro since.
And what is your position with them?
I'm in customer services. It's a group in the marketing department.
Mm-hmm. When you came back to Winnipeg, after Hong Kong, did you have to go in the hospital again for another medical or any type of treatment or anything?
No. We just we were checked over once or twice, and that was it.